hamsa manaso hamso
hamsa so hamso
hamsena pratibodhita
hamsena pratibodhita
svasta statya vicharena
svasta statya vicharena
nastam apa punasmitim
nastam apa punasmitim
evamsa manaso hamso
evamsa manaso hamso
hamsena pratibodhita Naštam apa punasmitim. Evam. Thus. Saha. He. The individual soul.
Manasaha.
Living together within the heart. Hamsaha.
Like the swan.
Hamsena.
By the other
swan.
Pratibodhitaha.
Being instructed.
Svastaha.
Situated in self-realization.
Tatya vicharena.
By being separated from the supersoul. Nashtam,
which was lost.
Apa, gained. Punaha,
again.
Smritim,
real memory.
Translation of purpose by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada
Ki.
In this way, both the swans live together in the heart. When the one swan is instructed by the other, he is situated in his constitutional position. This means he regains his original Krishna consciousness, which was lost because of his material attraction. Here it is clearly stated, Hamso Hamsena Pratibodhitaha. The individual soul and the super soul are both compared to swans, Hamsa, because they are white or uncontaminated. One swan, however, is superior and the instructor and is the instructor of the other. When the inferior swan is separated from the other swan, he is attracted to material enjoyment. This is the cause of his fall down. When he hears the instructions of the other swan, he understands his real position and is again revived to his original consciousness. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, comes down, avatar, to deliver his devotee and kill the demons. He also gives his sublime instructions in the form of Bhagavad Gita. The individual soul has to understand his position by the grace of the Lord and the spiritual master, because the text of Bhagavad Gita cannot be understood simply by academic qualification. One has to learn Bhagavad Gita from a realized soul. Tadvidi pranipatina pariprasana sevaya upadikshanti tejanam yainas tatvadarshinaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire for him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Thus, one has to select a bona fide spiritual master and become enlightened to his original consciousness. In this way, the individual soul can understand that he is always subordinate to the super soul. As soon as he declines to remain subordinate and tries to become an enjoyer, he begins his material condition. When he abandons the spirit of being an individual owner or enjoyer, he becomes situated in a situated state. The word svastaha, meaning situated in one's original position, is very significant in this verse. When one gives up his unwanted attitude of superiority, he becomes situated in his original position. The word tatya vicharina is also significant, for it indicates that when one is separated from God due to disobedience, his real sense is lost. Again, by the grace of Krishna and Guru, he can be properly situated in his liberated position. These verses are spoken by Srila Narada Muni, and his purpose is in speaking them is to revive our consciousness. Although the living entity and the super soul are one in quality, the individual soul has to pursue the instruction of the super soul. That is the state of liberation.
Om Agyanati Milanasya Gnani Nashakaya Shakshirumi Tamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So it's a very nice verse coming to the end of the chapter and very clear instructions and very important topic, which is the Guru Tattva topic. Of course, it's a huge topic, so we'll just touch upon it. In the beginning, Srila Prabhupada speaks about, you know, the fact that both the soul and the individual soul and Paramatma, the super soul, are like swans. He's referring to the fact that they're both pure. So many times we're very much in anxiety that we are impure and, you know, we're fallen and, you know, so much anxiety because of that. But actually, in the ultimate sense, the soul is pure. The soul is pure as is the super soul. And there's no question of the soul becoming impure. The soul is always pure. What is impure is our consciousness, because of these exact points that I've been mentioning here, the forgetfulness of Krishna, the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, think that one is a proprietor, the owner of things. So this is what actually creates the impurity, the consciousness that we start to develop. So obviously the Paramatma is a superior soul. Just the word param gives the idea of creator. And, you know, he's also compared to the guru within, the spiritual master within us. And he's the guru that is always with us. He never leaves our company, no matter how contaminated our consciousness becomes. In other words, no matter how far we are from this pure state, Paramatma is always there. The guru is always there and giving all kinds of possibilities to help us to remember Krishna and to come back to our liberated state, to a pure state, to a proper consciousness. Many times I think that the super soul and the soul is a little bit like we're trying to listen to a radio with a lot of turbulence in the beginning of our spiritual life. We're trying to catch a radio wave, and there's a lot of noise. You can't figure out what the radio is saying, the channel, because of all the turbulence. So it's a little bit like that in the beginning of our spiritual life. The mind is creating so much turbulence. We can't hear the super soul, the instructions from within. And the whole purpose of spiritual life, which is very, you know, full of, you know, all kinds of opportunities, challenges. You know, it's a very, very rich life. Spiritual life is has many aspects to it. It's all to come to this point where we can actually tune in better and better and better to the super soul, and that we can actually finally get the channel without any turbulences, or you know, something very slight. You can't hear any turbulences anymore. You can actually hear what the channel is saying, what the radio wave is saying. So in this way, if we can really come to the point of not having any more turbulences and hearing the super soul, then we will come to this point of liberation where we can actually hear. The super soul is telling us, guiding us at every moment. So hearing, as you can see, hearing is an essential part in spiritual life. You know, without proper hearing, we can't go very far. In the first aspect of spiritual life is to be able to hear properly. Shravana is essential. Without hearing, we're not going anywhere without proper hearing. As Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, to study Bhagavad Gita cannot be understood simply by academic qualification. We can't study Bhagavad Gita and become self-realized. We can, you know, that's good for our intelligence and to understand, and remember the philosophy, but actually the real understanding of Bhagavad Gita comes from within the heart by purifying one's consciousness. So Krishna creates all these facilities that we get to be able to tune in to the super soul. So within, that's the goal, to be able to hear and surrender to Krishna within. That's the goal in our spiritual life, to be able to listen to the super soul at every moment and have his protection, his guidance, his instructions, hear his instruction. And externally, the spiritual life, as I said, has many different, aspects. And of course, listening to external sources of knowledge and realization, persons who have achieved higher realization is essential to help us to be able to fine-tune into listening to the super soul. So Krishna gives a lot of facilities, as it's mentioned in the book, where Krishna comes himself as avatar to give, association, instructions, to kill the demons, and so many, and great auspicious atmosphere. He sends his representatives, one after the other, to help humanity to be able to be on the on the right path. So Krishna is very generous in giving plenty of shiksha. So the top, getting shiksha is essential in spiritual life. So Krishna is very generous. He gives so much shiksha in so many ways, collectively as society, and also individually. Each one of us, we get so many opportunities to hear. Krishna will always send us persons and situations and books and knowledge to be able to guide us. And so Srila Prabhupada talks about, of course, that to learn Bhagavad Gita, we have to approach a realized soul. So this brings in the topic of Guru, of course. And that the verse quoted from Bhagavad Gita, it's very crucial, because it shows how we need to approach a spiritual master, spiritual leader, is by having the proper attitude. In other words, we have to make sure that we come with the right mentality, not that we just, barge in and, we have the wrong attitude, the wrong mentality, and we think we're going to challenge the Guru or some way force our spiritual advancement, by forcing the Guru to reveal something to us. And the other one, of course, is to render practical service. So it's one thing is the attitude, the mentality in which we approach a spiritual master. And the other one is the service that we learn, the practical service, that we do something practical. It could be menial, could be some practical service, something that we're doing. And so with this attitude and this service attitude and humble and spiritual devotional attitude, we can hear properly. And then, of course, we'll be able to actually receive the instructions. So spiritual master is a very, in our tradition, the principle of shiksha is a very broad principle. And we're not a strict diksha line in which diksha is the main thing, but it's definitely a shiksha line in which instructions are passed over from one person to the other through generations. And instructions that enlighten us and inspire us to make progress in spiritual life. So, in our daily life, as devotees, we have the opportunity to get instructions from many different sources. In our society, for Srila Prabhupada plays a prominent role in which he gives instructions to us constantly, daily, through his books. We have all these classes, conversations, videos, books, letters. So there's unlimited amount of shiksha we can get from Srila Prabhupada. It's accessible to everyone. We just have to approach it in a proper mentality, proper attitude, mood, in this Tadvibhi Paripatina mood. Then we have, of course, also all the past acharyas, which are manuscript through Srila Prabhupada's books, and books that are being available. If we have the credentials and the capacity to read books by previous acharyas, they're available, so then, more shiksha is there, is available in the form of books, translations from the previous acharyas. Then we have, of course, the present-day gurus and spiritual masters in our movement who give their personal guidance, they give their, his personal instructions to everyone, especially to their disciples, but to everyone. We have the sannyasis, the senior devotees, those who have been practicing Krishna consciousness for a very long time, and of course for those of us who are neophytes, even those devotees who are senior to us by, you know, some years, they can give us shelter and guidance to some point, to some level. So we have many opportunities to get shiksha in our movement. And of course, Diksha Gurus who give us initiation might play a very important role in our lives in the sense of giving us shelter and shiksha and helping us in our spiritual life. Or it might be that our Diksha Gurus are not so prominent in our spiritual life. That can happen. But Diksha Gurus are there and they play a particular function in our society. So the more the heart becomes pure, the more we are able to listen to Super Soul and also, of course, to more and more instructions from our spiritual masters. And if we become very broad in this principle of Shiksha, then we will see that we can get instructions from amazing places. Like Srila Prabhupada, he was so broad in his, you know, in his, you know, hearing, so capable of hearing that he would get instructions even from the most unexpected sources. For us it's very difficult when we think, unless, you know, somebody is like this and like that and very elevated and very spiritual, we can't get any instructions. So we compare and we think, you know, we're superior to others. But if we become very, very humble and we really want to hear Krishna, you know, teaching us different things externally, then we will be able to hear even, you know, from amazing sources. And recently we're organizing an event called the World Parliament of the World's Religions. It's a very big event. Every 5 years, thousands of people come together from different faith backgrounds, and they have 1 week of seminars and workshops and cultural, you know, all kinds of activity. And we're trying to do that for Brussels. And the original idea for proposing Brussels came from, you know, one rabbi who's not so known, who was in the previous parliament in Melbourne. And he had the idea to, why not in Brussels? So then from that idea, you know, things started to happen. I thought, yeah, why not? It's a good idea. So I gave my energy and started to get involved, and other people are getting involved in that. But we went to see some spiritual leaders, I mean, some religious leaders from what they call mainstream, which is a little bit not from my point of view, not the right terminology, more like the majority religions in Belgium. And they have a lot of difficulty to accept that this idea is a good idea, though, you know, obviously it is a good idea. They have a difficulty to accept it's a good idea because it came from such and such person who is not, you know, famous or established or mainstream or majority, etc., etc., person. And I had, you know, we had some meetings to try to convince this, you know, leader, Belgian leader, that, you know, it's a good idea. Why doesn't he give support? Why doesn't he, you know, participate in the project? And, you know, obviously for him, the fact that he didn't come from a certain source kind of made the idea not good. Until I really had to, you know, kind of get angry and say, you know, if it's a good idea, it's a good idea. It doesn't matter where it comes from. Even if you come, I was thinking of Srila Prabhupada's example where he got instructions even from somebody on the street in New York City. So even if you get instructions from, you know, somebody on the street, a bum, or somebody that, you know, is on the street, if it's a good instruction, if it's a good idea, you know, Krishna can obviously work through them. And if we're in tune, if we're really like humble and really receptive to hear instructions, then we can hear from, you know, a broad variety of sources. But that takes work. That's the whole process of being, you know, having the right attitude and being, you know, advanced in one's spiritual life. So that's something that came to my mind. You know, more we, you know, because actually in you know, we see that everybody has some level of, you know, Krishna consciousness, even those who are not practicing strictly, even somebody, anybody who has a human form is getting some instruction from Krishna from within, you know, about spiritual life. It all depends how much they are willing to, do something about it and be sincere and, you know, start practicing spiritual life. But everybody gets you know, some, you know, instruction from within. And then, of course, the more you become advanced, then the more, you know, you practice spiritual life and you're in regular contact with the Super Soul. And, of course, the pure devotee is 24 hours a day connected with the Super Soul, Srila Prabhupada, you know, awake or sleeping, you know, all day. He was connected with the Super Soul in an attitude of service, surrender, and remembrance of Krishna constantly. So, but everybody, even somebody who's, you know, so-called, you know, materialist, they also get instructions from Krishna from within. And if we're you know, capable, we can also get instructions from persons who are not very strict in their spiritual life. I'm not, you know, advocating that we should, you know, get instructions from everybody, but we should be so intensely in a mood of listening and hearing and in such a good attitude that we would be able to get instructions when they're good, of course, from any source. But we have our traditional sources and Krishna makes it very, you know, they're very much available. But we have to really work on the attitude that doesn't allow us to hear properly. That's our main problem. Here it's mentioned pride, you know. When one gives up one's unwanted attitude of superiority means pride. You know, that I know everything, I'm great, I made it, you know. False ego, pride. That's a very strong impediment in having the right attitude. Then, of course, he also mentioned the sense of ownership. You know, we also become attached to possessions and ownership of, you know, even sometimes ownership of one's service. You know, we kind of want, you know, want to possess it, and we become very, you know, ownership can be very strong negative influence. And then, of course, enjoyment, that's our biggest problem. We are constantly thinking, how am I going to enjoy? You know, how am I going to get something out of it? Some, you know, sense of enjoyment, some fun. So if we can really work on these attitudes that are not going to allow us to hear properly, then we can really fine-tune in hearing Krishna within and also Krishna without, you know, hearing from different sources that we can really hear. Because that's the biggest problem in this world. People are, you know, talking a lot and we're doing a lot of things, but how much people are actually hearing to each other? How much people are hearing, you know, even their own family members and their close people? We can see that we don't hear so much. You know, we're just hearing our own mind, our own, you know, enjoyment plans and, you know, all our anxieties of ownership and pride. We're listening to ourselves, we're listening to all this turbulence. We can't really tune in to listen to Krishna and to all the others who are trying to give us good advice. And that sometimes is frustrating, you know, we try to give advice to somebody or instruction and we see that they're not hearing. So first you have to help them to be able to hear before you can give them instructions of what to do or what is beneficial for them. Because if people can't hear, then you're just talking for nothing, you become frustrated, the person doesn't get any benefit. And you know, so you really have to help create the proper attitude, the proper mentality to hear. That's why so much of our time is engaged in, you know, doing service and having the right attitude, because that will allow us to be able to make spiritual progress. It will purify our heart, or, you know, the the attitude of surrender, submissive, submission, and service, practical service. So it's very clearly mentioned that in the verse that if we abandon this attitude, then we will automatically achieve the original state. But we have to abandon them 100%. So sometimes, because we abandoned some of them 5%, 10%, 20%, 30%, even 40%, we think, okay, we made it. But it's an ongoing process, because, you know, to abandon pride, to abandon a sense of ownership, enjoyment, it's not just, you know, just because you were able to abandon once or twice these tendencies that you've made. It's that they're there in the heart, and they need a constant work at it. It's like heavy duty, workout. When you go to the sports club, it's, you know, people who get muscles and all that, they have to really work hard. So we have to work hard in getting this good consciousness and being able to hear, you know, being absorbed in spiritual life, because we get interference all the time. And the false ego is very, you know, present. So we can see how important this element of surrender and submission is for the individual soul, that even somebody like Arjuna, who was of course theoretically equal to Krishna, as you know, in the sense that the souls are equal in quality, but also he was like a friend of Krishna, so they had a specific relationship. Even then he had to give up that particular rasa with Krishna to be able to hear. Even as friends, you can't hear somebody so well because you're friends, so you just, you know, you share things. But if you really want to hear, you have to, you know, understand that you're in an inferior position. Somebody has a superior position of enlightenment, of Krishna consciousness, of advancement. So you have to be able to submissively hear, and for that you have to leave aside, you know, familiarity, you know, feelings of that we're equal. You know, if you want to get, you know, advice from somebody that is superior to you. So we have to work on that very much also. So it's a very, very broad topic. You know, Guru Tattva is like huge topic. So many books have been written on it, and so many discussions have gone on. So it's not something that you can conclude and say, you know, it's like this and that's it. It's a very dynamic and live topic. And even within ISKCON, there's a whole, in the strategic planning sessions that they have from the GBC, they have a whole committee or team which is discussing, for example, Srila Prabhupada's position is how to really present it, communicate it in a wholesome way to the movement. What is Srila Prabhupada's position in regards to Shiksha, to position of spiritual master and the teachings of Srila Prabhupada in ISKCON, etc. So it's an ongoing discussion. And this purport very nicely kind of touches upon some of the aspects, especially the hearing, how to hear properly, and to, you know, reject certain attitudes that impede us from hearing. And that ultimately we are pure, because many times we feel, oh, I'm fallen, I'm impure, you know, this, that. But actually the soul is pure, the soul is Hamsa. So if we have that faith that the soul is pure, and we have faith in the teachings and the process, by applying it, then we can come to the stage of purity ourselves, of that liberated stage. So we should not listen to the mind, which is also telling us, oh, I'm fallen, and there's no way out of it, and you know, I have to surrender to you, just surrender to me and be fallen, follow me. And so the mind is very expert. In the beginning, the mind is very well tuned in with our false ego. But as we make progress in spiritual life, then the mind kind of cools down a little. But you know, it's always there. So until you get the perfect connection with the channel, the mind will give us some disturbance here and there. Any questions or comments or realizations? Well, obviously for some it will be very strong because the Diksha Guru might have that very strong Shiksha, a relationship with the disciple that he's giving him a lot of instructions and shelter and you know, it's that's kind of like, in many cases it's like that, but you might also have cases in which the Diksha Guru is not so much present and is not maybe giving so much instructions to the disciple. So Shiksha is there in many ways, so it's like Shiksha as a whole is a very broad topic which goes beyond the principle of Diksha, of, you know, initiation, formal initiation into the Sampradaya, because there have been many cases like that in the past, I guess in the present and probably in the future. So Shiksha is the main element that binds us to the teachings, to the tradition, to the movement, to the Krishna, to follow the instructions. Do you want to comment or elaborate on?
Well, I guess it's important that the disciple has clear expectations and he has to discuss these things. Some gurus, they just don't have time to write any letters, and you're lucky if you see them once a year. So I guess if you need more than that, you have to get that clear from the guru. And that's not just, you know, now we have the internet, you can hear the lectures online and things. But some gurus feel like they need more attention from the guru. So it seems like that's something that you have to clear up from the beginning, isn't it?
If you feel the need to have regular instructions from your initiating spiritual master, you have to be clear about that in the beginning when you're, you know, considering taking initiation from a particular devotee, and see if you will be able to do that. You know, in which ways or how you will be able to give instructions. If that's the relationship that you would like to have with that devotee. Of course, nowadays with technology, it becomes a little bit more easy. But still, when you connect on the internet or like that, it's still not maybe as personal as when you get direct instructions, written or physical or telephone. Yes, okay. Previous question, now you have one connected to this.
Well, my question was the same. So I was just thinking that maybe we should come to a point where we don't need this really strong Shiksha relationship, like the physical, like instructions in the sense of physical
exchange
or through letters or phone calls, you know, or whatever. Come to a point of maturity and maybe this Shiksha relationship can be more like in other ways. Maybe there's better.
So she's saying that maybe with maturity we might need less of physical exchanges with the spiritual master. If we look at, you know, the very advanced devotees, pure devotees, sometimes they, you know, there are cases in which there was never even a physical relationship. It was really based on Shiksha and a very sincere desire to please and to follow in somebody's footsteps or serve a certain personality. And even Srila Prabhupada, you know, he definitely had physical contact and got instructions, but it wasn't like, you know, constantly all the time. It was very, you know, occasional and but also very powerful. So we should come to the point where we can, you know, be inspired in our spiritual life without the need of, you know, the guru coming physically to tell us, you know, or to serve the guru physically in order to feel connected. Like that. I think all gurus are saying that, and sometimes it's difficult because we're unified, so we need the chastisement or the nectar or, you know, some, you know, personal contact. So it's not that it's wrong or anything, but with maturity we can, you know, maybe need it less.
When Srila Prabhupada was there, he was stressing very much that we should follow the authorities around us, like the temple president, the GBC, temple commander, like that. And so that is also Shiksha, and more on a practical level, but also philosophically, it's also, that is very important, very practical. It's on a day-to-day basis, you know, you can, especially that aspect of seva, you know, you said tatvi pranipatina, pariprasina, sevaya. So seva is very important, and we have to, that is very close to us and practical.
I think the seva aspect, you know, sometimes we might get into the tendency of making a distinction between service and spiritual kind of, you know, somebody who's going to inspire spiritually or, you know, like that, kind of trying to create a mystical division between service and spiritual instructions. But actually, service is an essential part of Krishna consciousness. You cannot minimize it and think, oh, it's just something practical to maintain the building or the place or maintain, you know, my body or whatever. It's really part, it's really part of the whole process. Otherwise it wouldn't be in the Bhagavad Gita. Render service is not a light thing. It's part of making that spiritual progress. And, you know, but sometimes we kind of make distinction between things, you know, institutional and spiritual, and I think if we create this division, then we will have problems because we kind of separate the process into parts and say this is less important and this is more important. But if we keep it all as Srila Prabhupada established it, then we'll have much more chances of succeeding because there's no difference between all the practical services and the instruction we get from the authorities and the more mystical, esoterical things we might get from other sources and devotee. And that tendency, I feel, sometimes is kind of being developed. I don't think it's a healthy tendency.
I just said to put your comment now. It is necessary to make the service, to do the service, to render service not only to the Diksha Guru, which seems a more valuable service, but also to the Shiksha Guru and to others.
Yeah, to have a service attitude is very nice to anybody.
Okay.
To anybody, yeah. That's what it's all about. Otherwise we become a little bit kind of sectarian or cliche, you know. I'm just doing service to my guru and everybody else, you know, who cares? It's not very healthy. So, you know, we'll put more of one's heart, maybe with some particular individual devotee who is inspiring us in a particular way, but it doesn't, you can't disconnect that with the same type of attitude with others.
So what happens if you could convince a person about the other way?
I couldn't convince him, no, but the president, at least I felt good because the president of this parliament of the world religion, he said that at least I had some, you know, because I was very strong when I presented that, he said I had some backbone because, you know, I said what I really felt, and, you know, he was being, you know, he wasn't reasonable. but we still haven't convinced him. We might convince him he's coming here on the 10th of November for a Belgian Council of Leaders here, and also the delegation from Chicago is coming to Radovid, so we're going to try to arrange a meeting so that we can convince him that a good idea is a good idea, it doesn't matter where he's coming from, and please join it and support it and be part of it.
Who is that person?
Can't say.
of the good ideas that come from any person, I have always a big concern. It depends if I am able to distinguish the good advice or the bad advice that a person who is not very advanced is very much percentageally very much prone to give me a bad advice and a good advice. So if I'm starting, for example, in spiritual life, I have interest in only taking good advices, and therefore, because I'm not able to distinguish properly, then it's more safe for me to only take advices from very advanced devotees than from anyone, because anyone till this moment has given me very bad advices sometimes. Sometimes maybe a good advice, but the most of them were very bad. So this is very hard. Maybe Prabhupada could take a good advice from anyone in the street, but if I take a good an advice from anyone in the street, maybe it's take a cigarette or let's go meat eating or something like this or other things.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, we have to, in the beginning, we have to, you know, follow the advice of those that are showing good example, who are, you know, our spiritual, you know, seniors. That's very clear. But, you know, we shouldn't, you know, forget about the principle that as we advance, that could happen, that we might be able to get advice from others. I mean, we also seek advice from, like in ISKCON, we sometimes seek advice from professionals because, you know, you can get advice from, you know, persons who might not be at a spiritual standard, but who have certain knowledge, and they can share that. Of course, it's not spiritual knowledge; it's about practical things. But many times you don't even want to get advice from them because we think, oh, we can't get advice from anybody because they're not spiritually elevated, etc.
But I think it's very difficult. In advance to know if an advice is good or bad. You have to take the advice and go through, and then maybe after 2 years say it was not a good advice, because you only see that a good advice is good or bad after having put it into practice. So it's very dangerous with the advice.
Risky.
It's risky.
I mean, it's a big topic, with the Diksha. I wouldn't be able to comment on that. It's a big topic, especially when you want to talk about very high levels of eternal relationships, spiritual world, etc., etc. That requires a kind of spiritual vision to be able to answer that particular question. Because you're not talking about relationships of, you know, of shiksha and diksha in this world, you're talking about something beyond this world. So I wouldn't be able to comment on that, you know, how it works with the spiritual eternal relationships, because I don't have any realization. But in this world, I think, I think the relationship between Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru are both very important. We shouldn't make too much of a separation. Otherwise, it's kind of sectarian. It's very easy to become sectarian, very easy to criticize others, to put others down, to not listen to others. And you know, you become kind of isolated. And I don't think that's not at all what our movement is meant to be, that we want to just, you know, focus on one particular individual or guru, because otherwise we can't It's not a preaching mission. It's not a teamwork. It becomes like just individual groups who some or other manage to keep together. Sometimes not even that. So I think that we have to really cultivate that broader perspective on Shiksha. And you know, it always been natural that one has, you know, his heart is more in particular individual, that's normal. But to become a kind of exclusivist and even, you know, creates friction. And about the spiritual eternal relationships, maybe somebody else can say something, because to me it's a big topic.
Even in ISKCON sometimes, but one guru initiated a disciple, and he knows that this disciple has a very good relationship with one of his brothers, and just speaking, I know that Chakdaka Swami gave one disciple 2 months for his master, and the spiritual master was very attached to him. Like, he had to Bhakti Chusama. At that time, Bhakti Chusama was an initiated. So Chakdaka Swami initiated him and said, well, he's yours. So, as this boy was so attached to Bhakti Chusama, at that time, Bhakti Chusama was an initiated.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's. I think there's some common sense that can be involved in some, you know, affinity of the heart and like that. It's, I think in that sense, it's not totally governed by rules and regulations. Manual regulation would be to get the blessings of your guru to take shelter of somebody else as far as Shiksha's concerned. Other than that, it's very hard to dictate this kind of thing.
Yes, now these days we see like so many things, we see so many religions, we see so many so-called gurus, and then the purpose says we have to surrender to a self-realized soul. But we are in a complete conditioned state, that means we are blind, so we are not able to see who is a self-realized soul. So then how you know to whom you have to surrender?
Well, you have to, that's why we have many, you know, checks and balances in the sense that it's not just surrendering to an individual, but you also have scriptures, you have institutions, like, okay, to some level this can represent certain philosophy and certain principles. So the guru has to also be in line with the principles and the philosophy that is presented in ISKCON. And if you go outside of ISKCON, then scriptures are still scriptures. You know, if the gurus are not representing, if you're talking about Hindu gurus or Indian gurus, if they're not representing, practicing the teachings from the scriptures, then you become more and more at risk, because you go more and more outside of sampradaya, of philosophy, of scripture. You go more and more to somebody's, you know, it could be somebody who creates this kind of philosophy, and okay, it might not be so bad, not so good, but it becomes more and more risky. And then, yes, you can surrender to somebody like that, and if you're sincere, Krishna will still maybe help you to make spiritual progress. But that's why there's more than just individuals who have spiritual, you know, some shakti or spiritual realizations. It's also about, you know, what teachings are they following, what scriptures, and in general, it's like that. But nowadays, you have in the West, in Christianity, you have the free churches, we call it. It's just anybody starts their own church, and they have their own interpretation, their own understanding. And in Hinduism, you have the free gurus, they're called. They're not belonging to any sampradaya or any tradition, any, you know, scriptures. They just take a little bit from here and from there. They're spiritually inclined, and they create their own philosophy. So if you go towards a free guru, yeah, it could be a good experience. It could also not be. You know, there's more risk involved because it's outside of any particular tradition and scriptures, which are somewhat a guarantee or protection. The same applies with, you know, within ISKCON. There's a lot of checks and balances, and there's a lot of principles, and the philosophy is very clear. You have the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, which are the basis of everything that happens in ISKCON. So, you know, gurus have to kind of fall in line with all that. So there's a lot more protection in that sense. But since, you know, relationship between an individual and a guru is personal and it's about based on the heart, you can obviously get shelter and instruction from whoever you're inspired, but you have to check. If you want to discriminate a certain level, where you're going to get instruction, from which institution, which tradition, which guru, then you have to use your intelligence. And if you're sincere, then Krishna will help you. Even if you go to a free guru or whatever, then if you're sincere, Krishna will eventually help you in your spiritual life. It's not that the free gurus are necessarily all condemned. It's risky business because they're not following a particular line, but they might be helping people in their spiritual progress. They become an institution in themselves, because it's not just one or two. It's like there's tons of them now. In India, there's tons of free gurus. They're not following any particular, isn't it? And it doesn't mean that they're bad. There might be some bad ones, and there might be some very good ones who are sincere. It's not that automatically they're bad, but it becomes more risky when you follow a guru that doesn't follow a particular tradition. It's very popular these days because people don't like limits or rules or all these kind of things, but it is risky.
Yeah, I was thinking of a surrender. That surrender is of, it comes later stages in devotional service in life. First is about Shraddha, and Shraddha in Bhagavatam, it's mostly taken into context of practice. It's not the faith like faith we have Christian condition that believe in the teachings of dogma, or belief or faith in a person. So Shraddha in Bhagavatam is mostly in the practice. So this other Shraddha is in the practice, not in a person. It's not excluded, but it's mostly in the practice. That's important to first place the Shraddha, place the practice, and then later stages a person may surrender to certain.
Good point. Sometimes we want to go very quickly to, a relationship in the sense of getting shelter in the vigil, but we can very easily also take shelter in process, in the practice, in the tradition, and that relationship will manifest on maybe when we're stronger, when we're more ready for it.
After a certain point, what I understood from reading Prabhupada, the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, is that after having known some truth, that some evidences that the scriptures are really like this and the Parampara has to be respected, I think that the free gurus get some sort of guilt because they surely have known that they should be in the Parampara and they deny the Parampara. And when I take to the free guru and not to, for example, Prabhupada, I make a choice between one or other. And so this is for me a big danger. You have to really look very, very carefully what you are choosing. You cannot choose anything because it seems like after a certain point, this free guru has surely also taken this decision, and so he's faulty. He's not so good if I approach him. It's a cheater. This is cheating. I think Prabhupada, every time that he was confronted with such free gurus, maybe at the beginning he was careful and he did not attack them, but after half an hour he was attacking them very clearly. Yes, and very boldly. And so our attitude maybe at the first beginning can be to go to a free guru, but as soon as we have organize a little bit our view, we have to also take a choice. And the help that Krishna can give me is to show me the way of real Krishna consciousness, not of any sort of Krishna consciousness, which invades any sort of figure.
It is interesting that one free guru, not in India but in the West, told Bhakti Jankaswami, you have to go to these. Thank you.
So you have some good free guru.
Yes, actually, later on, this guru took initiation from Bhakti Jyotiswami.
Wonderful. This is a story a little bit confirming what I just started. I cannot have a strong opinion, but I have always understood that Prabhupada was very clear. If there is a good thing and there is thousands not so good things. So maybe these three gurus are less good, are better than if I take to another completely stupid thing that I can also do in my life. It is a little bit nearer to the truth, but you have to be very careful. You couldn't have anything.
That's really an exception that someone would say that. You go to the Islam to Asia, you know, it's really exceptional. That's why the point is. Yes, but this is a very beautiful story. Yes, because it's really, it's what I feel. You have to be really very careful. And the mercy comes from Krishna if you come your leader to the right path. But it's one right path. And 1 million of more or less better or more or less not to lose. But you have to spend your time.
I would like this to, as far as I understood what you meant by taking shiksha and listening to others, is not really accepting them as a shiksha guru, but just be humble to people, you know, and not just be sectarian.
Yeah, be very careful.
That's the point. We are just humble, but we take the real shiksha from our own line, from our acharyas, you know, because we know they are perfect. But if someone in the Christian church or the Jewish church or a Muslim or a free guru says a good thing, and we are able, you know, mature enough to recognize that as Krishna spoke through them, then we have to do that. That is humility. And people also will see these guys, these Hare Krishnas, are not sectarian. They're very humble. If I have a good realization, they are prepared to listen to me. And that is what you mean, I think.
Exactly.
Okay.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki? Srimad Prabhupada ki? Gaura Premanandi ki?